This is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with Non-Birding Bill.
Hello.
And it is our goal to try and podcast about something bird-related and work out our marriage on this podcast.
That is not my goal.
This is the only time we talk to each other. The other times we just talk to each other on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
So, savor this podcast because it is going to be the last one probably for a week, if not two.
Right.
Because my travel schedule is going nuts.
Yeah.
Next week I will be at Klamath Falls for the Winter Wings Bird Festival in Oregon.
Oregon,
yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. I haven't birded that state ever.
Oh, really? You've never been to Oregon?
No, I've been to Paradise, but I've never been to Oregon. So... I'm doing that. And then I have to go to the Rio Grande Valley in Corpus Christi to work on... We talked about this on the last podcast, but the really exciting contest that we're going to do this spring is I'm doing a web series with my buddy Clay Taylor, who works for Swarovski. Can't even speak. Swarovski Optic North America.
And with Swarovski, which is the off-brand.
Yeah, so we're going to do some...
with three E's.
No, it's the actual, it's a real deal. We're making a web series. It's 8 episodes. Each episode is really short, so you can watch it on a break at work, or you can watch it discreetly at work. Each episode is going to have some birding and digiscoping tips. They're only 5 to 8 minutes long. But the birds that are in each episode, Clay and I have digiscoped ourselves, and the birds are a clue to the overall theme of the show.
Okay.
If you guess the theme, or you can guess the theme, if you're correct, you're going to be in a drawing for a new Swarovski scope.
That's great. I could use a Swarovski scope.
You could. You actually could.
Yeah.
But you're not eligible because you know what the theme is.
Oh, well, that just makes it easier. I just
Yes. You're not going to win.
Then they won't be eligible.
But the listeners can win. So I'm really excited about doing this. We're filming it. We're going to be doing some filming. And I'm really excited because I'm hoping what's going to happen with this is that this is kind of a pilot series and that we're able to do others. Clay and I have already discussed what a second series could be. We already have like a game provided for
that. You're two cops. Both of you are 3 days from retirement.
Kind of what it is. Well, but I am getting some other sponsors. And I'm super excited that one of the sponsors that I just got today is the Alamo Inn, which is a really great place to stay in the Rio Grande Valley. If you're a birder, it's as expensive. I don't want to say it's cheap, but I mean, it's an economical place to stay. It costs as much, if not less, than the hotels around there.
Okay.
But you get this bonus of Keith Hackland, who's the owner, and he will clue you into anything you want to see. You want butterflies, he will set you up with butterflies. You want birds, he'll even guide you if you need to. He has this really cool system where you can sign out a cooler. And he has all this food that you can take out with you to go birding. So that way, if you find yourself at some place like Estero Llano Grande and the birding is really hot and you don't want to break for lunch, you have your cooler right there, this little portable cooler. So
what if I want to see a dead body?
That's something you ask Siri, not Keith Hackland.
Okay.
But no, I'm really excited that he's on board as a sponsor. We're talking to some other sponsors. If you have a birding-related business and you would like to know about sponsorship opportunities, we have some. Because we have some potential for some other contests, because I'm really excited. We have a cameo from someone who's kind of well-known.
Okay.
Who's a cameo in the first episode. So I thought maybe if a sponsor wanted to do that, we could have them, you know, the contest be you have to identify who that person is in that particular episode. And if you do, you're in a drawing for another type of prize.
It'd be really awkward if nobody does.
People are going to know who this is.
Right.
Not everyone is going to know this, but there are people who are in the know with who you and I know, or just really nerdy people.
Right.
I shouldn't say nerdy. People that are into comedy are going to know who it is. And I'm just going to tell you now, it's not Neil Gaiman. Yeah. So if you're thinking, oh, well, it's obviously Neil Gaiman, no.
So guessing this gets you into the drawing, you don't automatically win if you're the first person.
Guessing the series gets you into the drawing. Right. And so I'm just really excited. It's kind of like a little mystery game, and it's also going to have some birding tips and photography tips.
Now, does this require people to like travel all over the country, solving clues hidden under rocks?
This series. It involves Clay and I traveling.
Do people have to break into the Smithsonian and find the clue written on the back of the Declaration of Independence?
I don't know, but that's a good idea for season 3. We've already figured out season two. Maybe I could Nicolas Cage up season two, because I have a really great idea
for We're going to write two. The clue on one bird and release it in America.
No, but I'm just excited because the other thing that I'm excited about this project is, creatively, it gives me kind of constraints because I can only use birds that fit the clue.
Right.
And I know Clay has all this great footage that he never has time to post, so I get to, like, put his stuff out there. I have all this footage that I don't always have time to post, so it's also... And then sometimes, like, when I was in Florida recently, I got some really great footage, and I was like, oh, this is a really great video, but I can't use it in the series at all because you don't fit the clue. I'll have to save it for season two or season three. So anyway, keep an eye open for that. I have put up a link. I made a trailer for our web series. Check it out. Share it with your friends. Let everybody know. I'm just really excited. And again, the more people that watch this, the more I can get sponsors in on it. So, and we can do more of these. So I'm just super excited. Watch for that. It'll be happening this spring. We'll be talking about it more in this podcast. And again, you could win a Swarovski spotting scope. So that's pretty cool.
All right.
Other things that are going on. Oh, there is another contest that is going on right now. This is a cool birding related contest. It's from the folks over at Birds and Blooms. And the prize is a trip to the biggest week in birding in Ohio, which you have gone to.
Yep.
I have gone to a couple of times. It's a lot of fun. If you need to see warblers, this is where you want to go.
Yeah.
It's can be a bit of sardine birding, but it's also kind of a party.
Sardine birding?
You're kind of jam-packed in sometimes.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of people there.
There are a lot of people there, but they help you get on the birds. And if you're claustrophobic like I am, there are ways to get around that. Oh, yeah. You know, just avoid the far end of the boardwalk and stay at the other end. And you still get to see all the birds. And, you know, you're not wishing everybody around you use Dial. I am referencing some really old stuff. Does Dial
you're
even
really
use
old.
That?
Yeah.
I am really old. I'm the same age as the turkey vulture at the Raptor Center. Yeah. We're both turning 40 this year. What? Anyway.
I don't have a response to that.
Can I still be a chick if I'm going to be 40?
I don't see why you're not. Chick is a state of
mind. Am I going to have to switch to bird broad?
Dame. Bird dame.
Dame bird chick. Mm. Anyway, Birds and Blooms has a contest, and it's a really cool contest because you have to make a video to say why you are Birds and Blooms' biggest fan.
Oh, okay.
And so you could do some really creative things. You know, you could do like a My Drunk Kitchen type thing, mm-hmm. where you just start talking and you just get progressively drunk.
Sure.
Maybe as you're making some suet, I don't know. You could, I don't know, if it were me, maybe I would... kind of start off kind of normal and then just kind of cut to various edits of and very over-emotional
states. No, what you would do
is
make an iMovie trailer.
I would make an iMovie trailer. If you have iMovie, I would make an iMovie trailer about why you should go. It's super easy. All you have to do is just plug in your footage.
Yeah.
Anyway, the entries need to be in to Birds and Blooms magazine by March 1st, 2014. So you have all of February to do this. They have some tips on how to make a great video. But yeah, open up FaceTime or... iMovie on your computer. If you have a smartphone, chances are good that you can record a video with that and tell them why you are Birds and Blooms' biggest fan. I would avoid going, you know, Kathy Bates and Misery on this. I certainly wouldn't go Glenn Close and Fatal Attraction on this.
Well, she wasn't really a fan. She was just a...
She was a big fan of Michael Douglas.
I don't think it was a fandom thing. I think it was a hookup that went wrong. Look, this is not the 90s movie... podcast.
That actually would be really funny if you did it kind of like one of those movies. If I would love the idea of someone in a Tilly hat being all Kathy Bates from Misery.
Because she doesn't swear. Somebody wear a Tilly hat.
I kind of want to do that, knowing that I can't win, and I can't win because I can't go.
Right.
I'm already booked for two other festivals. I'm going to do the Presque Isle Festival in Pennsylvania, and I'm doing. A Michigan Bird Festival, I think, is it the Tawas Bird Festival? So
yes, this is if I know the answer.
The problem I have is I'm down for so many bird festivals as far as like doing workshops and speaking and stuff that I have completely lost track. But so anyway, this is an excellent opportunity. Sign up for it. Kids, you do it. Kids, show your parents how to make a video. So and check out the website and enter in. I should ask you as a pro video guy that someone can hire for their company to make videos and stuff. Do you have any advice or tips? Suggestions?
No. Be, you know, be short. Be funny and short is always good advice. I mean, if you have any experience of using like the iMovie trailers, it shows you how to, you know, I mean, it forces you to make shortcuts and put stuff in, and it puts music underneath.
Well, yeah, it shows you how to do things like wide shot here, action shot here.
Yeah, don't go on forever. Make it like short.
Don't go. Yeah, if you follow the link for this podcast to the Biggest Week contest at Birds and Blooms, they have the full set of rules and tips for making a great video. And I can tell you, if your video is an hour long, they're not going to watch that. Keep it 3 minutes if you can.
I would consider that very long. But yeah.
Yeah. I would avoid nudity. I don't think that's going to help you win.
Doesn't hurt.
I think you would have a better... I'm going to stop.
Yeah. And we're moving on.
Okay. Oh, man. This next segment I have is going to be awkward now.
All right.
Well, I wanted to talk about this really cool kid I learned about.
Okay.
She's 11.
Okay.
She has seen over 3,000 birds.
What the heck?
I know. She is a lister. She's 11. And she already has Optic sponsorship.
Good.
I love this. I love this so much. And I know some people are already saying, well, clearly her parents are wealthy and they're taking her all over the world to be able to see these birds. You know, this is just kind of like, you know, a wealth privilege thing. You know what? I want to applaud her parents. If they're wealthy and they're making it possible for their kid to see as many birds as she can, I'm so happy that they're doing that and not channeling it into, let's make you look like a Barbie or a Bratz doll. You know, they're just, hey, you know what? We have some time off in the summer. We have the money to do it. Maya, you want to see some birds? You want to learn about birds? You want to go do this? Let's go do it. If my mom had had that kind of money when I was a kid, she would have done the same thing. She did the best she could. She used to take me to Brown County State Park. She would take me out of school to go to Brown County State Park to see birds if my grades were good enough. So, you know, I think this is fantastic. I hope she sticks with it. She's at 11. She may be getting into the tween years where, you know, you cannot help but fight your hormones and your pop culture.
Does she have, like, a blog or something? Or how did we hear about this girl?
She has a Facebook page. I have no idea if she friends people. I sent her a friend request, and I sounded like a total fangirl. I was like, I think you're really awesome. You don't know who I am. But, you know, I promise well, your parents probably don't want me to friend you because I am
little
naughty.
She can be on Facebook if she's 11. That's against the law.
She does have a Facebook page because I saw it.
All right.
But no, she's cute as a button. And apparently she was in a BBC documentary about 4 years ago in the Twitcher's A Very British Obsession, which I thought I saw. But
so when she was seven?
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that nutty?
That is a little nutty. Oh, she's British?
Yes.
That makes much more sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, she's already been to Australia. As a matter of fact, the bird that she has on her head is an Australia bird. Okay. But I love that she's already 11. And let's see. Her mother, Helena, said Swarovski has even published a blog about her after helping her get to 3,000. Before the trip to South America, we surprised her with a new pair of binoculars. They were an immediate hit, and she is never in the field without them. So she has Swarovski backing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and it says, in Peru, disaster struck when Maya Rose fell over in the Andes and smashed her binoculars against the rocks, breaking them in two pieces. She was devastated until Swarovski came to the rescue and fixed them without any charge or fuss, which is all part of their warranty.
Right.
But...
Well, no, if she's British, that makes sense for two reasons. One, because Twitcher culture and listing culture is much bigger over there. And also, it's, you know, it's easy to go to other countries if you're, you know... in England.
Well, that's true. It's just as difficult in England to get to Australia, though, as it is for you and I. Yeah. But the other thing is that I love about this is that she's 11 and she already has Optic sponsorship. Yeah. She's 11. This is what I would call an upper echelon birder. And the other thing that I think is cool about this, when I talk to British bird watchers, most of them are male.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that they comment on when they come to the US and they go to the bird festivals are how many women that they see at bird festivals. Okay. And they're like, we just don't have women like that. I don't understand why they don't. And I said, I bet you have just as many birders over in the UK, but they don't want to associate with you crazy Twitcher guys. They're going out and doing it on their own. They're doing it on the side.
Oh, wait, so the British people don't have
women. The Brits do not have as many women birding as we... That's one of the things that they're just kind of like, look at all the women that are here at bird festival. We just don't have that.
Yeah, I do have to say that when I've been to the birding conventions, it has seemed... around 50-50, I'd
yeah,
have to say.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah.
So, I'm not going to make this a feminist thing, but I love this as a kid. Mm-hmm. She's 11 years old. She has her parents. She has her crap together. She's got her parents. Okay, parents, I want to see these birds. You help me do it with your money. So I hope that this leads to great things. I hope that she always enjoys birds. I hope. I just think it's cool. Go, mm-hmm. Maya. Maya, I hope I get to meet you. I was all excited because I'm going to Bird Fair in Rutland in the UK this summer. And I even kind of hinted around on Tim Appleton, one of the founders, on his Facebook page. I was like, boy, it'd be really awesome if she could be there. Do you think maybe that's possible? And Tim's like, oh, maybe I should ask her and, you know, see if her parents are okay with her. And parents are like, what you don't understand is that Bird Fair happens in the summer, and that's when we, you know, do all of our traveling. So Bird Fair, we can't do it this time, but we have done it in the past. And I'm like, oh, I so wanted to meet her. But then again, I don't want to be this crazy stalker lady coming up to her saying,
too late.
Maya, I think you're really cool. I think you're really awesome.
Take her out for a drink.
I would take her out for a Shirley Temple. I would not take her out for a drink.
All right, what else we got?
We have so many things. Hey, this is cool news. The American Birding Association just announced all of their award winners.
Okay. What did I get?
Bupkis.
Wait, somebody else got the Bill Steitler Birder of the Year Award?
There is no Bill Steitler Birder of the Year Award.
Well, obviously not. I mean, it's not something that they give out every year like an Oscar. It's something that somebody has to have the merit to win.
You know, you and I could start coming up with our own awards and give out a Bill Steitler Birder of the Year Award.
Well, that would be two. That would just create confusion.
No, actually, we could do the non-Birder of the Year Award. Tell me about all the birds you didn't see.
So many birds.
Make a little fancy plaque. Have my sister Robin do it. But a couple things. There are a lot of great people on here, but we're exceptionally proud here in Minnesota because Laura Erickson, Minnesota birder, got the Roger Torrey Peterson Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, good for Laura.
For promoting the cause of birding. And she has done quite a bit of stuff. What?
Just promoting the cause of birding as opposed to promoting digital video disc distribution in North America. Obviously, it's a birding award. It's great.
But no, Laura's done a lot. I mean, she has that book, you know, All the Ways That You Can Help Birds, you know, 1,001 Ways You Can Help Birds. Is it 1,001 or 101?
It's 101. Why do I remember that?
Why do you remember that and not me?
I don't know.
It's probably because the book is in the bedroom next to our bed.
You know,
which that didn't sound weird at all. Yeah, if you want to, like, spice up your marriage at night, keep Laura Erickson's book next to your bed.
Oh, yeah. We have the audiobook. Sorry, Laura, this went in a very strange direction. All right, so who else won awards?
Some people that I don't know, okay. But they all did really wonderful things.
Good.
But the other thing that is significant is that they created a Betty Peterson Award for Conservation and Community. Oh. And Betty is the woman who started the whole Optics to the Tropics program that they have there.
Right.
And she died unexpectedly last year. But what was cool was they started an award in her name, and she, of course, is the first recipient. And the focus of this new award is not so much about ornithology, but it's more on the effective application of skills that support and connect people. So, like, because that was what she did. So it's more for people that do kind of behind the scenes stuff. So anyway, really cool stuff. So I'm really excited for Laura Erickson. And you can listen to Laura Erickson. She has a radio show on public radio, and I think it is available in podcast theme, and it's called For the Birds. So, Okay. Yeah, if you can't listen to me, or if you don't like what I sound like, according to some emails, then by all means, there are other podcasts out there, and Laura Erickson
will be one. I don't have to listen to you? I can listen to this podcast?
You can listen to Laura Erickson.
What am I doing here?
You can't be married to Laura Erickson, though. You can't be married.
Car driving away.
You can't be married to her.
No.
She's already married. And I don't think you're her type.
Not going to touch that line with 10-foot pole. What's our next story?
You're moving it along faster than I am ready to
go. That was my line.
Audubon president David Yarnold was on the Colbert Report.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually a really great segment because...
Was this about the superb owl?
Yes.
Oh.
I don't know why the superb owl irritates me. I think I feel like it's a joke that's run into the ground, because you and I never do that. But anyway, yes, the superb owl.
Which was Colbert's way of talking about the Super Bowl without saying it.
Yeah, which I don't understand that whole thing about
Well, it doesn't matter if you understand it. What was the...
Okay, anyway. But he had the David Yarnold on, and he was talking about this whole controversy about spotted owls and barred owls. Because right. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has just finally said, yeah, the barred owls are driving out the spotted owls, so we're just going to start culling them.
Right.
And so they had a barred owl on the Colbert Report. And it's really funny. They have kind of a joke segment at the end that involves rabbits. It's hilarious. Yeah. But they also just kind of talked about the debate of should we be doing this. And
now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm springing this on you unexpectedly, but this whole thing about the spotted owl being endangered mm-hmm. is it was endangered in one area, if I'm not mistaken, right? It's not like the bird itself was in danger of becoming extinct.
That's tricky because now we're kind of getting into subspecies.
Okay.
There are areas where the spotted owl is endangered and there are areas where it's threatened.
Okay.
Now, you and I are also talking about an ornithologist that we met a long time ago who I cannot remember his name, but was part of that and said, well, you know, they weren't that endangered if you knew where to look for them. Mm. The bottom line, it's a habitat issue. Their habitat is being destroyed. And what's happened is that it's created so much pressure that all the birds are competing for this
sure.
particular type okay. of old growth forest that they need. And the barred owl being more aggressive is driving them out. Okay. And shooting the barred owl is kind of a short-term solution.
Mm-hmm.
But if we just managed the habitat better and we managed our timber practices better, if we weren't so short-sighted and always thinking about dollar bills, dollar bills, dollar bills, and these short-term job solutions, we could come up with a way to manage the habitat better where they wouldn't be threatened or endangered where they are, and we wouldn't have to shoot barred owls. So basically what this comes down to is kind of like, you know, my whole theory about one of the things that's wrong where we have problems with wars and poverty is it's a lack of education. And education is a long-term solution. Habitat is a long-term solution. It's a solution, but it's going to take time to manage that and grow that. So, and that's what Yarnold was trying to say on the Colbert Report, as, you know, Stephen Colbert was making all these jokes. It basically comes down to a habitat issue. And I have mixed feelings because, you know, we manage coyotes in endangered
sure.
situations. And it's like, when I hear this conversation about, oh, we're going to shoot barred owls to protect the spotted owls, that makes me sick to my stomach. But then I thought, well, if this was a coyote, would I be as sick to my stomach? Because right. I feel like coyotes are something to be managed. Barred owls have a very stable population.
Well, I don't call this was a problem with the barn owl as opposed to the barred owl.
No. Barn owls are in trouble in certain areas.
Well, no, I remember that they were trying to introduce them into areas, and I think it was like great horned owls were killing them.
Oh, you're thinking of that story I told you when I was a kid.
Right.
When we found out in Indiana there was a barn owl reintroduction mm-hmm. program, and my parents inquired about it, and mm-hmm. they were told, oh, your mm-hmm. yard habitat is perfect for great horned owls, and if right. we released any barn owls there, they would be mm-hmm. eaten. And when we first did the peregrine falcon reintroduction here in Minnesota, it was a failure. The first year that they released chicks
mm-hmm.
that cost several thousand dollars, all of them were eaten by great horned owls.
Wow.
And the official word is they managed the great horned owls and mm-hmm. they removed them. They shot them.
Right.
You can find, I have one of the books here that talks about how they shot the great horned owls. And so sometimes you have to make these tricky decisions. But at the end of the day, it would be good if we could find a way to better manage those old growth forests rather than come up with a short-term solution of just shooting a barred owl to protect the spotted owl.
Right.
And since we're talking about owls and controversy,
okay,
why don't we talk... I forgot this was the story I wanted to lead with. I'm kind of glad we waited to get into this.
All right.
Dear snowy owls, please go back north. Go back north now. I am so... So here's...
Are they taking jobs from...
Well, winter is a tough time for bird watchers because... No, well, you have time on your hands. There aren't as many birds. You spend more time on the internet, and it's time to have all those philosophical debates.
Oh, boy. Tell me about it. Not even birds. Just it's like just in everybody's...
general, yeah. And I remember when I was young and there would be all these debates and people I respected would start to bow out of these debates pretty early. And I'm like, man, they're really bitter. I'm to that point now where it's like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Right. No one's going to agree on it. It's just going
to
be...
Well, I mean, I don't mean to be rude about this, but it's not like you guys have any authority in this situation.
Okay. Well, there are several arguments going on. I mean, number one, there's always the argument of don't get too close to the owl, which right. that I'm kind of a fan of. I wrote something up for 10,000 Birds about how close is too close to get to an owl. And, you know, if an owl is staring at you nonstop or mm-hmm. is facing you, maybe back off a little bit.
Right.
You know, if the owl is not paying attention to you, then you're fine. Then we had this guy in Iowa who started a website on how to feed snowy owls. And that was that has been the debate of the year of why is it okay to feed chickadees as opposed to owls. I'm on the fence on it. I really am. I'm not a fan of...
Was he talking about feeding them live prey?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of gets tricky.
Well... And some of the issues I've had, there was a video that somebody posted. They put their GoPro camera on the ground, mm-hmm. and they released a mouse. And the snowy owl runs into the camera, and you can clearly see the snowy owl is flying into the middle of several people. And I thought, that doesn't look good. But then I thought, you know, when we do woodcock trips, mm-hmm. we position ourselves so that woodcocks will land in the middle of people.
Oh, yeah.
And then the woodcocks go about their business as if it's no big deal.
Right.
But, and I thought, so why is it, what's bothering me about this video? It's bothering me that the owl is hitting the camera and therefore right. could injure itself. But I figured out what was really bothering me about it, because the guy explained it in the video. What had happened was they released the mouse, and the mouse freaked out and ran towards them. And that's why the owl got so close to them, got to the camera. And I thought, oh... That may have been what you call a feeder mouse, but that was a mouse from a pet store. That was a mouse that was like, oh, I'm habituated to humans. I'm going to run towards the humans because I'm freaked out about being run. And I thought, and I realized what a hypocritical argument that is because, you know, you and I get a cow share from mm-hmm. one of the farmers. We have the option of going to meet our cow.
All right.
Meeting
no, as I have said many times, I completely recognize my hypocrisy in regards to...
Well, now
the
argument has gone next level bananas.
Okay.
Because a falconer in Wisconsin. And so last week it started with this petition showed up on the Minnesota Birding Facebook page of someone saying, please, you know, make it illegal for falconers to take.
And like when I heard there was a story about a woman who was like feeding crows or something, or she was feeding like raptors, but she was like leaving like meat that was already dead out. Here's the beginning.
Not only did you read that story, yeah. I told you that story because I was one of my customers at the bird store.
Yeah.
Who was feeding a red-shouldered hawk. Yeah.
No, it's completely leaving live animals out as bait to be killed for these things.
Well, there are people
but
who
I have no
say
problem with the bird themselves. You know,
there are people who say you shouldn't feed hawks, you shouldn't habituate
right.
them to humans. I'm on the fence. I need more research on it. Right. I honestly am. You know, let's say you're someone who has an education bird of prey on your own, and you mm-hmm. happen to see an owl in your backyard, and you're like, oh, I'm going to take one of the frozen mice. I'm going to thaw it out. I'm going to wiggle it and see mm-hmm. if the owl will come down. The owl will come down. If that's in your backyard, I really don't care.
Right.
And I just would like to see more research of why this is good or bad. Why do some birds, like crows, get a pass, but owls don't?
Right.
And I just feel like I can argue both sides of that right now. I just need more research to feel like whether it's a good or a bad thing. We haven't even gotten to the actual.
You were about to talk about the guy who.
Okay.
The falconer.
So yeah, this petition showed up last week on Minnesota Birding about please Wisconsin DNR make it illegal to trap snowy owls or any migratory bird of prey. And I thought, well. Falconers aren't going to get on board with that because, yeah. So apparently what had happened was, and this is completely legal, so no matter how you feel on this, this guy did something that's legal. There are an influx of snowy owls this year. It's easy to find them if you know where to look for them. You don't even necessarily need listservs. But this guy went to Freedom, Wisconsin, and he live-trapped a hatchier or a first-year snowy owl
mm-hmm.
and is posted it on Facebook. And so birders saw this, and it immediately, the arguments between, oh, falconry bad, evil thing,
right.
Started up. And I thought, and I was trying to process why this bothered me, because I saw that, I was like, oh, dude, why did you do that? And I thought, okay, how is this different than this guy going out and trapping a hatchier deer falcon or northern goshawk
right.
or even a red-tailed hawk? And I thought, well, it's because it's an owl. And it's like, well, I know falconers can legally take great-horned owls. That wouldn't bother me if he'd done that. I think what's bothering me is that this is a bird species that make birders get in a tizzy and...
It's unusual.
It's unusual. And He's getting a snowy owl in a year when we have an influx of them. It's not like he's getting a snowy owl when only one has come down.
Right.
The other thing that makes this confusing is that Project Snowstorm, this really cool project we've been talking about where they're tracking, they're putting satellite transmitters on snowy owls, they also trapped a bird at the same time in Freedom, Wisconsin, and they now have a, because a lot of people were saying, no, it wasn't a falconer, it was Project Snowstorm. No, there were two birds in Freedom, Wisconsin that got trapped. One ended up with a satellite transmitter, and one is now in training to be a falconry bird.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. First of all, this is not some guy keeping this as a pet. Mm-mm. This is a falconer.
A master falconer. That's the highest level of falconer.
A master falconer. This is a person who knows that. When you see, okay, the other thing is in England, after the Harry Potter movies came out, there is no regulation of keeping birds of prey. So there were people who took snowy owls as pets who did not know what the hell they were doing with these things.
And they imprinted them, and those you can't release.
And this guy is, I mean, this is what he does. And I know people have very strong feelings about falconry, but the fact is, these guys understand that, well, these guys know how to deal with the birds. And when they were doing the peregrine reintroduction, falconers were crucial.
They were.
To the reason why we have peregrines.
In the Midwest.
In the Midwest, in the numbers we do, is because of the help that falconers.
They donated their birds to the captive breeding programs. When the captive breeding programs started with ornithologists and failed miserably, they showed them how to do it. In Minnesota, falconers paid for the birds that all got killed that first year.
And I mean, and when falconers take birds out of the wild, and this was the amazing thing that I learned from knowing you, they can release those birds back into the wild, and the birds survive.
Most falconers end up releasing their birds.
Because the birds, falconry is not keeping the bird as a pet, it's teaching it how to hunt.
It's not hunting partner.
Yeah, you become a hunting partner, and if you release the bird just knows how to hunt, and then it just eats the food that it catches.
Yeah, you're habituating the bird to humans, but not in the sense that it's going to be a pet.
Yeah.
And if you're a bad hunting partner, that bird will fly away from you and not come back. Now, there are falconers who do get birds from captive breeders.
Oh, yeah.
And those birds are imprinted, and those birds are generally not released.
Right.
Those birds don't want to be released. Or if they do get out for a few days, they're like, oh, I want to go back to where I got the day-old chicks.
But this is... I grasp why people are upset about this, but this is not... It's not as if, okay, well, let me put it to you this way. This was the other thing I was thinking of while you were talking about this story is gyr falcons are rare in our part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But if one was sighted, I imagine falconers would be very excited about the idea of catching one for falconry purposes.
Well, this is the other debate that's come up, is that the fear was that this guy was cruising listservs and watching for birds. And there is this general fear out there of people saying, oh, you don't report these birds of prey because a greedy falconer is going to go out and get them.
Greedy falconer, yeah. People go into falconry for money. That's, you know.
Well, that's a separate issue. But a falconer in the U.S. can only take a hatchier bird. So if you're seeing an adult gyr falcon, the falconer is going to want to go out and see it,
right?
But they cannot legally trap it.
Oh, sure.
And if you think that, well, they might trap it and hide it, falconers police themselves.
Oh no, they know each other. It's a very tight community.
It is, and the other thing is there's so few falconers out there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a drop in the bucket compared to birders.
Right.
So even if they're taking something out of the population, it's not.
And especially like an invasion year like this, this is going to have
now
zero effect on.
That's not to say that there is not a black market for falconry birds.
Oh, yeah.
That is an international trade, and that generally involves the white gyr falcon, and those are guys who are going up out in remote areas where they're not going to be found, and they're selling them in the Middle East.
But that's got nothing
to
do with what we're talking
about. That's part
of
the grand scheme of poaching. That's.
I mean, this is a boom year for snowy owls, which means we're going to have a bust year where there's not enough food to support, because I mean, I think we talked last time about how, you know, the birds that are down here, they've weighed them and they seem to be doing very well. But I mean, if they go back up to the Arctic after the boom year for lemmings, there's going to be a bust. So I think people need to take a step back and look at this
Well,
logically.
One of the really cool things to come out of this is one of the listserv managers in Wisconsin reached out to Dan Orr, who I know of. I know him casually. I don't know him as well as I know other Falconers, but he's the president of the Wisconsin Falconry Association. And he did this really cool thing because most of the Falconers I know, they don't like to talk to birders about it because they always feel like they're being defensive.
Oh, sure.
Because they always feel like birders are like, oh, you know, you're going to take our birds away. And he had this great conversation with this Wisconsin listserv owner and talked about falconry, and the listserv guy was like, oh, this isn't just a hobby, this is a lifestyle. And he said, and he was like, if you want to come out, you know, and go hunting with me, if you want to see what this is like, this is great. Mm-hmm. And the falconers that I know the guy who caught the snowy owl, they're all saying he's probably only going to hunt with it for a few seasons. Figure out how unwieldy it is to have these birds and then let it go. I talked to another falconer who says the guy who trapped the snowy had a snowy owl before. Mm-hmm. Trapped one years ago. Mm-hmm. And flew with it successfully, but one time it got a pigeon that had frounce. Yeah. And when your bird of prey gets that, unless you figure it out right away
it's a disease.
It's a disease, okay. Yeah. And it died from frounce because it ate a pigeon. That's something that could happen to a wild snowy owl. There are probably wild snowy owls who have like, hey, I'm going to eat this pigeon. And they ended up with frowns. Yeah. But it's not the end of the world. He did this legally. If you think falconers shouldn't have snowy owls, then, you know, talk to your state about that. But I remember years ago when I was considering becoming a falconer. Mm-hmm. I cannot become a falconer because I travel way too much. And having a bird of prey is...
In our apartment would be awkward, to say the least.
We know people that could house the bird for us. You know, I mean, I could have it elsewhere. Us, yes. Anyway, I don't have the lifestyle. You have to be home. You cannot travel as much as I do and be a falconer. But I remember looking at the list of birds years ago for Minnesota, and I think snowy owl was on there, as was great horned owl. And I remember talking to my friend Frank, who's a master falconer. I'm like, really? Owls? He's like, you don't want to know. They're hard to train. And he's like, especially great horns, you're going to have to hunt them at night. You can't watch anything. And they fly really slow.
Yeah.
Someone else was talking to me on Twitter about this, and apparently there were some kites that nested in New Hampshire, and people were freaking out about falconers going to steal the kites. You know, don't list the locations. Like, no falconer is going to want a kite, because all kites do is hunt dragonflies. They want the big birds where they can, like, you know, this duck we're eating tonight? So, my goshawk caught that duck.
If you're upset about this one guy taking a snowy owl, I urge you to look into the situation in England where... Snowy owls, domesticated, imprinted on humans, were bought as pets, and then, as always happens, they are released, and these animals cannot take care of themselves. This is not what's going on here.
And I would encourage you is that if you know a falconer, go out to lunch with them. You know, ask if you can see the housing. If a falconer ever says, hey, if you want to go out hunting with me sometime, go with them. It's fascinating. I mean, you get to be in on the hunt with the bird. Mm-hmm. You get to see the amazing flight technique. I mean, if you think about the times that you, like yesterday when I was on my run, a Cooper's hawk just flew in and nailed a house sparrow and took off. And I was like, oh, that was really cool. You're kind of scheduling that when you have a falconry bird. And it's fascinating to do that. You will see that most falconers have a tremendous amount of respect for the birds they work with and for birds in the wild. They don't want birds to disappear from the wild. They don't want to exhaust the resource. And I'm sure someone out there is listening to this podcast saying, I know this one falconer who is a total dick. And here's the thing. How many dicks do we know in the birding community? You know, we have the same percentage in the birding community that they have in falconry, I'm sure. There's one in every bunch. Right. You can't base an entire group. But I would encourage you to go out with them. If you don't get it, if you don't understand why someone would enjoy it, that's cool. Keep in mind, a lot of people don't understand why we like to go stand in a cold, dark box when it's, you know, -2 degrees to watch 40,000 sandhill cranes fly in. There are people who think that what we do is stupid. Just give falconry a chance and understand that falconers, the difference between birders and falconers is birders, we kind of like to keep things at a distance. We don't want to be hands-on with the birds. But a falconer, they see a bird of prey and they're like, I want to be part of that hunting experience. I want to be in on that. I want to experience it. And that's what they're trying to do. And if you don't agree with it, I respect that. I understand that. But please understand that falconers are not trying to eliminate every single wild bird that we have out there. They're cool dudes. They're like Billy Zane.
Uh-huh.
And they're not all men. There are quite a few female falconers out there, too.
All right. Next story.
No, I want to talk about falconry some more. I should also mention that I wrote all this up on 10,000 Birds. I also included a list of falconry myths, of things that people have actually told me in the last week of what they know about falconry, and things that I knew about them, or I thought I knew about them based on books that I read as a kid. And, yeah, you should check that out on 10,000 Birds. 10,000 Birds is getting a lot of advertising for me this week.
All right. What else we got?
Oh, you and I were in Mansfield, Ohio.
We were.
Because you have family there.
I do.
And we went birding and we saw a peacock there at Gorman Nature Center.
Yes, we did. That was very strange.
Really strange to see out in the winter. Peacocks in Mansfield, Ohio aren't completely out of the ordinary because there's this place called Kingwood Center.
Yes, it was the mansion of a very rich man who was interested in birds and gardens. And he left his estate to the city, and it's sort of a park, I guess, but it still has his gardens and his house and his collection of birds.
And it's about 4.5 miles from where we were.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, oh, well, this peacock must be from there, and just wandered over this into the realm of possibility. Right. It is not one of the Kingwood birds, because I posted the blog entry, and the guy that runs Gorman was like, oh, hey. This bird just showed up. We don't know where it belongs. But if you know someone that would like to have the peacock, we're really trying to find it at home. So if you're in Ohio and you would like to have a beautiful male peacock,
contact Gorman Nature Center.
In Mansfield, Ohio. And if you live in Mansfield, Ohio, and you were like, what?
There's this vision of a falconer with a peacock on his arm. Swooping down on
now, it is
some
not,
corn.
Ironically enough, it is not legal for a falconer to have a peacock for hunting purposes.
Lie, Socrates.
Oh, hey, because I have not talked enough about Corey or 10,000 Birds.
Okay.
Corey Finger over at 10,000 Birds, who runs it with Mike Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Florida when I was in Florida for Space Coast. He has documentation of what appears to be feral Nande parakeets. It's part of a wild population, which sure. I think are cannibal now. And it's two females trying to mate. And they're trying to mate like females do because they don't know how to do, I should be on top. They're kind of like backing into each other.
Okay.
So it's kind of this cool thing. And what had happened was he saw these two females. He documented all of it. He's trying to parse it together. So he does what I would do. You call Julie Sycophus. And say, hey, what's going on here? And she's like, oh, yeah, it's lesbians. And they don't know how to, like, mate. They're a bonded pair. So, and lesbian pairings are things that happen in the, or I shouldn't say lesbian. Same-sex pairings are something that happens in the birding and animal world.
Right.
I talk about it a little bit in my book. And I wasn't saying that, I wasn't trying to differentiate that lesbians don't happen in the birding world. I was just saying that.
Oh, boy. Hey, I would definitely. I would never say lesbians do not happen in the birding world.
I was just trying to say that.
Allow me to express my personal experience that lesbians do indeed happen in the birding world.
Yes, they do.
As to gay men.
I just realized how weird that sounded the way I phrased it. I was trying to say that members of the same sex in birds pair up from time to time in a variety of species. There are a lot of gay and lesbian people in the birding community. I love them. I'm good friends with quite a few of them.
Yes.
The ones that are in and out. But, where was I going with this?
I have no idea.
Anyway, I posted it and it's gone around in a couple of places. And the people who freak out about this are just like, this is some kind of political agenda. How can you say these are lesbians and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I wasn't really posting this to make it kind of a political issue. I mean, it's clearly happening in these photos. These two birds are literally bumping uglies. They're literally bumping their cloacas. And they're doing it in a way that's unique because they're two females. Because if it was a male, the male would know, oh, hey, I need to get on top of you. But since they're female, they just know, I need to back up and bump into something. And so they're two females backing up.
They need
up
to back it up.
They need to back it up. Oh. Back it up. Back it up. I will haunt your dreams. They need to back it up and bump some uglies. But it's a fascinating post. And
accepting the GLAAD Award for Best Nature Podcast.
I don't It's one of these things that frustrates me. I don't feel like science should be something that is political. I don't.
No, it's not.
And I don't understand.
Okay. Here's. You could have. Let me say this. I don't think you did anything wrong. I think you could have expected this response.
Just really surprised by the number of people that follow things that I link to online and seem surprised when I link to something. Because we're pro gay marriage. I don't feel bad if someone suddenly decides that they're not going to listen to this podcast anymore because we're for this form of equality.
It's a simple scientific fact that there are same-sex pairings in the animal world.
It is. It's not a political issue. We're not trying to push any kind of agenda here, apart from maybe equality. But it happens in nature regardless of whatever religious belief you believe in. It happens without anyone's control.
I'm more interested in like how these birds bonded, you know.
Well, they're social animals, and what's fascinating with some of the same sex pairings that happen in the animal, because someone else was saying this can't happen because otherwise they would go extinct, you know. And I'm like, but see, here's the thing: there are some birds that kind of figure out ways around it. I mean, there are seabirds where, is it the albatross?
Well, I mean, it's
they would like hook up with the male so they could get fertilized, then lay the egg, and then drive the male off.
Yeah, I mean, it's anthropomorphic. You know, it goes back to that whole thing that what was that author, that Nagelty thing, where
the birds are good and bad.
Yeah, they would like, you know, birds that people could eat were good. They were noble birds. And, you know, but the owls, which ate the poultry the farmer had, were the Lord High Executioner of the woods swooping in to, you know, all this. It's just a simple, it is a thing that happens.
The way I respond to this is, this would be like calling female Wilson's phalaropes hoe bag deadbeat mothers. Because all they do is mate with the males, lay their eggs, and then leave the male to raise their young.
Yeah, I mean you can't
say that about a Wilson's phalarope.
Was it crows that, or what was some sort of blackbird where there's like the one bird will wait until the male leaves and then come in and try to fertilize the female?
Oh, and that happens like with a lot of species. Yeah, but yeah, red-winged blackbirds.
Red-winged blackbirds. You can't, I mean, you can't prescribe any sort of human morality to this.
This is something that happens regardless of whatever political side you're on. And if you're someone who's not on board with the whole gay marriage thing, I hope you will be someday, because it's not going to just... We're still married. And how long has gay marriage been legal in Minnesota?
Less than a year.
Yeah. And a lot of our same-sex paired friends are getting engaged in marriage, and...
It hasn't really, and granted, I completely, as much as possible, isolate myself from other people.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's really affected us all that much.
No. I kind of like, we have game night with some of our gay friends. It's kind of fun to be with other people.
Game night? We
play board games.
Oh, is that what we do? Okay.
Yeah, we were playing a Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
Which is a board game.
It is.
It's not anything devious.
All right, next story.
That may be our last story. I did not mean to go down the whole... Oh, crap.
Yeah.
There is an albatross live cam in Hawaii. So if you are as tired of this winter as I am, check this out. The baby albatross is already hatched.
Okay.
Keep in mind, Hawaii is in a really bizarre time zone compared to where most of us live.
Like,
so,
what, 6 hours behind us or something like that?
If that. So half the time when I'm looking at it in the morning, it's still dark. I really don't get any action on there until the afternoon.
Did they do highlights, or do you have to watch it only?
Oh, people are grabbing screenshots and things like that. But it's kind of nice to hear some of the birds that are in the background. I want to go to Hawaii to see the Laysan albatross.
Okay. Let's go.
Right now. Oh, this is another really cool thing. You know what? This is going to shock you.
Okay.
Petitions work. Among
Cagney
other things.
Cagney and Lacey is coming back?
No, but Murder, She Wrote the Musical is on.
Good.
We are so old. No, okay, we've talked about this before on the podcast. There was a wind farm that was supposed to go up in...
All right.
Around near on Lake Erie, and it was part of this whole Camp Perry project. It's been halted.
Oh, good.
Part of it has been a lot of the media that's been in there. I'm sure some of it has had to do with the petitions that are out there. You and I even made a video kind of supporting...
You made the video.
I made the video, you didn't. Well,
how did I get involved with this? Okay. You made the video.
Oh, so you're pro wind farms, Glenn?
I am. I run around with a giant fan on my back trying to create more wind.
I think the big thing, though, that really helped stop this was the American Bird Conservancy suing the project.
Okay.
That's what really spoke volumes. And I have to say, I have given the American Birding Conservancy some begrudging publicity on this podcast because I feel like all my press releases from them is all like, this is going to die. You don't do this now, this is a point where their extreme tactics worked well because they filed a lawsuit and threatened to sue over the wind turbines going up. And so it's been halted. I don't think the project is completely dead in the water. This is a crucial step, so we definitely need to keep an eye on it. But I'm not anti-wind. I've said this before because I've had people get on my case saying, well, you just don't want it in your backyard. It's like, I would be fine if a wind turbine was in my backyard. But if I lived in Lake Erie, I would definitely not want the wind turbine in my backyard because it's a major migratory corridor and that's going to kill a lot of birds and that's not what we want to do. So it's been halted at the moment. So that is that's really great. We need to keep our eye on it. Rabbit is chewing my slipper.
That's not news. Is that our last story?
That is our last story, unless you want to talk about that window thing.
No, we'll save that for next time. This is Bird Check Podcast number 164. If you have any questions for Sharon, you can talk to her on Twitter, where she is at birdchick. You can also email our questions, sharon@birdchick.com. This is going to be the last podcast probably for a couple of weeks.
I may see if I can get Clay to do a podcast with me. He'll be the stunt husband.
Sounds good. All right, talk to you later. Bye.